Good morning. Thank you.
What I was trying to do is, it sounds like this part like that.
No, because this goes in. This is also table 4. That change needs to get added.
And it's not. It doesn't have anything to do with the options.
Right.
Okay, so corporate was wrong about that.
Well, he wants to put his changes into. He's made changes to this. He wants to make sure those changes.
How are we going to have a conversation around this?
I got it.
Okay, but they don't have any of those.
Okay.
They are paperless. Yeah, it sounds like you have a minute. Maybe two.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Leland.
We have done some additional analysis in light of the information presented by Dr. Drake yesterday and wanted to present some of that here. We've gone back and assembled additional data for the August time period that he had presented yesterday, and you see that projected up here and have it in front of you. The time period that he was looking at, the gauge record at the in the Shasta goes back to 1911. As he mentioned yesterday, there was a change in the location of the gauge in the 1930s. We've represented that here as two different color symbols. So the pink ones are the Montague earlier gauge location, and then the green ones are the gauge at the mouth. And we've included a line here, a simple regression line, and I'll speak about that in a second, that just plots through the mouth data. It extends back to 1911, but it's that part of the line is not based on anything. And it shows that there hasn't been a lot of change in the flow over that period. So we had been looking at this ourselves prior to his presentation, and had noticed the same thing. We were looking at it for another reason. We were curious as to whether if there had been successful efforts in the watershed to increase flows and to dedicate flows, we thought that would have shown up in the record, and we didn't see any evidence of that. So we were looking at the same data and coming to a quite different sort of conclusion. The other line that we've put on here, though, is the precipitation line, and that seems to show a trend upward, which contradicts what he had said yesterday. So we're not exactly sure what the basis for his statements were with regard to that. We're also concerned that he may have included the Montague gauge data with the mouth data. Montague is upstream from the mouth. It's got a smaller watershed. You would expect the runoff to be smaller at a more upstream station. So we're not sure exactly how he handled that and what those results mean. There's also a concern about, even though we've done it here, the linear regression, my understanding from my staff is that that's an inappropriate technique to use to analyze changes in these kind of data. There's a more sophisticated test that's used for that. And I don't know what those results would look like if we went through that exercise as well for this. So those are a couple of points here. I think the other larger point is that we spoke yesterday about unimpaired flows, and as we explained, The analysis that we base that on, that Matt used in his presentation, basically assumes that the plumbing is in place in the watershed, and that plumbing primarily means that Dwinelle Reservoir is in place. We did not look at removal of Dwinelle as an option here, but the fact is that Dwinelle cuts off about a third of the main stem of the Shasta, along with all the tributaries that are associated with that. Those tributaries are cold water tributaries coming off of Mount Shasta and the Eddy Mountains, and represented good quality habitat for anadromous fish that is no longer available up there. So Dr. Drake's suggestion that there has been no change in temperature and no change in flow as a result of this is arguable, but it misses the larger point that there has been a huge change in the character of that watershed, and we are trying to work within that framework and not suggesting that Dwinelle be removed, but certainly removal of Dwinelle would constitute something that would fall under the rubric of an alternative flow regime that would result in substantial improvements of habitat and water quality associated with the availability of that habitat. So if we're going to, there are many pieces to the puzzle here. We're trying to work around one of those and work within the context of the existing plumbing and find a water quality solution that is within that framework.
Sure. Mr. Corbett.
Well, I had a couple questions. First of all, if I understand your line, it's pretty flat. Is that correct?
The main line is flat, yes.
I'll have a follow-up question, but was the assumption, can you state the assumptions for Dwinelle Dam, is that it's in place when you ran all the numbers, or...
Well,
you said something, and part of it, I heard, and part of it faded out.
The modeling work that we did, all of the analysis that we did on the main stem of the river, assumes that Dwinelle is in place.
Okay. And you skipped over his temperature analysis, and again, it gets really hard when you don't have the charts before you. I thought he gave relatively short periods of data that showed merely increasing the flow won't necessarily decrease the temperature, and that was it. Did he give historical temperature readings? I don't think he did. And what data do you have on that?
He did show for a short time period. I think it was 1998. I don't recall what the numbers were exactly. That. Okay, 98 to 2000, that during that period there was a dramatic, there were different hydrologic years, there was a lot more water in one of those years than in others, and that it didn't result in any change in any significant change in temperature at the observation point that he was presenting the data for. Our rebuttal to that was based on the fact that flow alone is not what is at issue here. It's the quality of the water associated with that flow, and that merely having more hot water in the stream, if that water is associated with existing uses, it is arguably wouldn't change anything.
Right, and I thought that destroyed the refugia argument. But are you telling me you don't have temperature data other than what he presented? Because everyone keeps going in this tiny period of time, and the real point is temperature going up or down. And
we can certainly assemble that and bring that back to you if you'd like. We don't. Go ahead.
I mean, in the staff report, this is certainly nothing new. We present all of the available temperature data, most of the reliable temperature data using the.
What is that trend? Summarize that trend for us. Is that flat, increasing?
Annual variability showing no trend.
Okay. And then this is a big question, if you want to take some time to answer it. I'm concerned here that we're asked to increase the flow when the data says it's been unchanged, and we're asked to highly regulate temperature when you just told me it's unchanged? And so what is my underlying justification here? Why will increasing the water supply help given those two factors? And take your time. I'm not trying to play gotcha. I really want to understand why you think your recommendation will result in the improvement in water quality that we want in this watershed.
Before you do that, Mrs. St. John, Ms. Coleman is...
Keep thinking. I guess it comes down to where the water comes from and its temperature. It's about the water in that river has been too hot for too long, and that's why the fish levels have declined. That's basically the analysis. It isn't about the amount of water. It's that the water there is too damn hot.
I understand, but we've had I understand that, but we've had a decline of fish.
Yeah.
And there are many causes, and no one watershed should either bear the whole burden or is the cause. But if they say the temperature hasn't been varying, you got the argument over many years that's maybe declined the fish. But otherwise, I know the fish have declined.
And
we want to do something about it.
And if you look at the records,
yeah,
at the rate of decline and when the decline occurred, I'm not sure we have correlated water temperatures with that.
Well, we don't, because the if you look at the, in particular, at the Fall Chinook and Spring Chinook escapement numbers, and those do go back to, the Fall Chinook at least, go back to pre-Dwinelle times. If you look at those numbers, it appears that the decline in the Fall Chinook and the elimination of the Spring Chinook run dates from the period shortly after Dwinelle was installed.
So, I agree with that.
So we're looking at a situation where the change in the hydromodification that occurred that resulted in that were arguably a primary driver of the declines date back to the late 1920s and 1930s, and that the adjudication that was signed in 1934 has been in place for all of that time and represents a fairly stable condition, as I understand it, over that time. So we wouldn't expect to see a lot of variability in flow. We wouldn't expect to see a lot of variability in temperature over that time, because we're working with what has been a stable arrangement for that whole time.
Let me play something back to you. Is your argument that because of the water adjudication and because of Dwinelle Dam, the only way to improve the fisheries, given constant water, given constant temperature, would be an increase in cold water, in effect, to retroactively mitigate those? Is that the argument?
That, I think it is the argument, in combination with the other factors that we talked about, which is management, better management of tailwater returns and improved shade.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Anderson?
On the chart you have up, just the units and the flow, I take that to be a total for the month in acre feet.
So it's average CFS over the month. Is that right?
That confuses me.
It seems like it's too hard.
If this is August, yesterday we were looking at CFS in the 20s.
Let us get back to you on that.
You're not anywhere close to 20 CFS this chart.
Yeah.
I just have a comment on, this is Samantha Olson, staff counsel. Dr. Drake introduced new evidence yesterday that I'm not sure that we can find credible at this point, because we don't understand his assumptions that he made in creating those charts. It's not clear where he got his data points, and we haven't had time to go back through and get his data set and understand what that evidence is. And so I would counsel the board to not rely on that evidence at this time.
But most of my questions were off the staff conclusion that there was no change in the water. There was not additional temperature data other than in the report and other what Dr. Drake did. So I am asking my question specifically on properly introduced evidence.
That's fine.
Mr. Anderson?
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of points I want to draw out in terms of John's discussion about temperature. Do we know the temperatures coming out of Big Springs?
Yes, we do. They, in the summertime, 11 or 12 degrees centigrade. And that's by measurement with Dr. Drake, as a matter of fact.
So the water entering the main stem, is it coming out of there, is it 11 degrees?
The Big Spring source water is on the order of 11 or 12 degrees centigrade.
Okay. And we were provided yesterday something from Pacific Coast Federation Fishermen Association. They had a chart that showed on their page 25 downstream migration trap results January to June 2001 that had information on the Chinook escapement. And it, I guess I was drawing it out because I was surprised by the number there, 262,000 fish seemed high compared to when you look in our document, compare a similar escapement.
Well, the 260,000 is not escapement. Escapement are returning adult spawners. The out-migrant are the little guys leaving the watershed. So those numbers typically are vastly different because the escapement number is, I'm not a fisheries biologist, but it's on the order of 1 or 2% of the out migrants.
So escapements return.
Is the returns, yes. It's
an interesting
counterintuitive.
Yeah, it's a little bit counterintuitive, but escapement means all those that escape, all of the things that, okay. that well, nail them in the process, the ones that manage to get back.
And also on this chart, it's data from January to June of 2001 of the small guys leaving. Are there other small guys left behind, or are they by June all left?
Again, you're talking to an engineer, not a fisheries biologist, so please keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. But my understanding is that the fall Chinook mostly have out-migrated by that time. Coho and steelhead have different patterns, and they leave at different times. But the focus of that out-migrant work, as I understand it, has been to catalog the fall Chinook out-migrant population. So,
Matt wants to. Yes, I asked Matt in terms of just the question came up yesterday in referencing the Klamath, and I was curious what the flow of the Klamath was at the mouth of the Shasta.
The mouth of the Shasta? I apologize. You mean at the mouth of the Shasta?
Yes.
Well, that's what we showed yesterday, that the baseline average flows.
But I'm.
For the Klamath. I apologize. We've been working on this, and I haven't got that information. But that's easily gotten. I mean, on average, I think the flow at the mouth of the Klamath is probably, the flow at the mouth of the Shasta is, less than 10% the flow of the mouth of the Klamath. If that puts it in perspective. No, that's.
You want to know where it comes together.
Right.
The prescribed flows at Iron Gate, depending on the water year, range from 600 up to something on the order of 11 or 1,200 CFS during the summertime. And so there are some gains between there and the Shasta, but just as a framework, that gives you an idea.
And the Shasta is at 20 or something like that.
For the August period that we looked at, it's 20. The long-term average, we've gone back and looked at that for August. And it is an average, is about twice that. It's about 40. So we looked at it.
The average over the period, the average at the mouth for the period of record is 34. So we were obliged to look at a critical condition. We looked at 2002. 2002 was a lower flow year where the average at the mouth in August was 22. So 22 to 34. I think that the other thing that I think that we're in this presentation of new information that we're losing sight of is that what this, what our analysis has shown is the need for additional dedicated cold water in-stream flow. What I think that Dr. Drake's presentation blurred was the fact that even under higher flow years, which are, you know, a wet hydrologic year, the cold water sources in the Shasta River watershed are being used through consumptive use, fully legally under current water rights, just as they are under low flow years. What I mean by that is those cold water sources are being diverted for agricultural use, which is one of the beneficial uses. The water is being used for consumptive use. It's returning to the water, generally speaking, hotter. What we're asking for is let's maintain a very, very small percentage of that. Keep it in the river. Let it be dedicated in the river. Make its way down through the system for the benefit of fish. So it's not like we're asking for something that's impossible. We're asking for a very small percentage of that available cold water resource. What makes the Shasta River watershed unique, as I've tried to explain a number of times, is Mount Shasta. It's a growing glacier. It's the only growing glacier in North America, I believe. It has this cold, there's snow melt, glacier melt, in addition to snow melt coming off the mountains. That's cold water. If a little bit of that water is maintained for the other beneficial use, the most critical and sensitive beneficial use to temperature, that is the cold water fishery, what we're demonstrating is just a small percentage. If that is maintained, we can support the beneficial use. For support all the beneficial uses. We are not asking, as Samantha Olson described yesterday, we are not asking anything about re-adjudication and taking of water rights. We are demonstrating that there's good work already going on in the watershed that's to be applauded among the local people of water conservation efforts. There's an article which we can photocopy if you'd like from the CRIMP newsletter quoting one of the landowners, stating water conservation efforts that he's done that have had dramatic improvements to cold water flow being maintained in the river. We're just saying, let's promote that. And we believe we need to have a goal, not a requirement, but a goal to measure progress of 45 CFS. But again, please keep this into perspective. 45 CFS is a very relatively small percentage of the available cold water in this watershed. That's what we're asking for. It's not a requirement. It's a recommendation. If it was a requirement, that has to be made at the state board. Please take that into consideration.
Okay, before we go further, Mr. Anderson.
On that point, Matt, what I can't put my finger right on it, but in the documentation, it showed the...
Excuse me, Mr. Anderson, let me interrupt you a moment. Somebody has pointed something out to us that is probably very germane, and I would like to have our counsel explain it to us. I mean, first of all, yesterday we had new information introduced, which probably was my error for having allowed new evidence to come into the record when, in fact, we had... is not there. I think it's also germane, and so I am. While I erred, I think I may have done it for all good causes. But the problem we have at the moment, and it is one which I will refer to our counsel, is that we have new information, and we now have a rebuttal to that new information by our staff, and the individual Dr. Drake is neither here nor do we have that information, and so I need an attorney to get me out of this quandary.
Well, Chairman, it's entirely appropriate to have a discussion.
What's the figures on the temperature for big spines?
About this evidence that was introduced yesterday, and there is no due process problem because Dr. Drait's not here to, you know, engage in this dialogue. Again, I counsel that we don't make a finding that relies on this new evidence or the rebuttal. I think it's just for our sake to have this dialogue, but I don't think the decision should rest on either the new evidence or the rebuttal. And so I think it's appropriate to have this conversation.
I'd like to add that Ms. Bailey wanted to also clarify that she believes that the temperature figures that you're using for Big Springs are incorrect.
Is that correct?
That you just used.
Well,
okay. So just to put that all out into the record, now the attorneys can deal with it.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, this is Cheryl Schaffner. I'd like to contribute to the dialogue just briefly. I'd like to clarify something that's obvious anyway, I just want to state it, but this is a quasi-legislative process. It is not a quasi-adjudicative process. There is no right to cross-examination. There is no right to rebuttal. This is simply an effort to provide whatever information is available before the board and allow it to deliberate on it. And to the fact that the public hearing process has closed and that there is not a continued opportunity to go back and forth on it is not inappropriate. If you feel it is helpful to you, it is certainly at your discretion to allow that, though. And any evidence introduced in this process, including the rebuttal, the questioning you're having with staff where they are drawing information that's already in the record, is not taking new evidence, it's simply analyzing what is in the record. And again, that is appropriate. And you can make findings on anything you've heard as to sufficiency, credibility, applicability, and be within the bounds of your discretion. Thank you.
Mr. Corbett, then we'll get back to Mr. Anderson.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Corbett.
First, I think we're getting mixed messages from counsel in the sense that we're told to disregard the introduced evidence and that we should keep it on the prior introduced evidence, which is what I said I was trying to do. Then I heard that it's introduced into evidence from counsel, and then presumably we're having a rebuttal to that. And what I'm really asking about to staff, and we keep taking off the top certain of Dr. Drake's testimony, that's fine, but I'm trying to bridge the analytical gap between our data and the recommendations. That's what I'm, and I realize, Cheryl, that since this is a legislative act, we don't have to meet that test. But I think it's pretty good for a board to be able to explain at the end of the day why you adopted a prescription. And what I'm getting is a fairly thin rationale from my standpoint that we're trying to rectify events starting in the 30s and 40s suddenly in 2006. And perhaps that's warranted because of the overall situation, but that's not as tight as I would have liked. And we also did have an emphasis, I don't care how we did it, we said cold water, and it is cold water. And cold water does eliminate some of Dr. Drake's arguments. But there seems to me there's been some push for water supply. And I'm having a hard time bridging the analytical gap, why that's in our report, and why the particular prescriptions we have will result in it. Now, I can see the prescriptions on tailwater, and having that come back makes sense. And that could solve a lot of problems. But that's what I'm after, is what is the specific logical steps we take? Here's our evidence, here's our prescriptions, and here's why they tie together.
Yes, Dr. Ranjit, would you please introduce yourself for the record? I don't believe you're here yet.
Of your staff, I want to address Mr. Corbett's sort of comments. I will go back. First of all, I want to explain the scenarios that we selected for doing our TMDLs. Why we started below Donnell Dam and starting with the year of 1934. Donnell Dam, my understanding is, went in somewhere around 1928, completed in the 30s. I would like you to kind of look at, this is where Donnell Dam went, and this part of the watershed, it cut it off from this part of the watershed. So basically, we went with the assumption that Donnell Dam is in, the plumbing is in, and we are not meeting the water quality standards for temperature. We are not meeting the temperature requirements of the Solmonids in this part of the watershed with the current plumbing. When we go back with what Dr. Drake presented, he's saying that at that time, the flows that we were seeing at the mouth of Shasta with Klamath are about the same, perhaps even increasing, but about the same. One of the things that's missing from that is that at that time, number one, this part of the watershed was available to the fish. We kept on hearing about refugia and finding the most fish where there are some cold water seeps into the main stem of the Shasta River. That's where the fish are. Well, guess what? The best and the most unique part of this watershed has been cut off by the Donnell Dam. Why this watershed historically is so productive and so unique? Because here we have Mount Shasta that has snow on it year-round. There are springs that bring that cold meth water available to the fish, and they discharge it into the streams. That is being cut off. Okay. So to go back to that scenario, if we would even today say, well, what would happen if this were to be gone? Well, guess what? The best habitat that has been cut off for these migrant fish would be available to them. That definitely is one of the solutions. We did not go there because Donnell Dam was put in pre-Clean Water Act. Usually our jurisdiction for looking at existing uses starts with the year of 1975, November, because that's when the Clean Water Act went in, and if there was water quality suitable for a beneficial use after that time, or if there was a beneficial that was occurring after that time, that is labeled as an existing beneficial use, and that's what this board is obliged to protect. So we went with this, that as far as our options available to us, our board, Donnell Dam is in place, it was pre-1975, and we started then our analysis below that. Okay. So to go back and say there were flows at that time that are comparable to today, that was a totally different scenario. For the fish, the best habitat that has been cut off today was available to them. We do not know what the temperature of those flows were, where those flows were being measured. My guess would be that those temperatures were a lot cooler because this water, instead of coming and being stopped here, was flowing through the arteries of that river. That was available. If I were to venture a guess, we don't have that temperature, that those temperatures would be cool. If not, there was a lot of more cold water available right at the base of Mount Shasta that is not there. So what we started our analysis was with, the Donnell Dam is in, the plumbing is in. Let's look at what the temperatures of the stream are today. And we were not meeting the water quality objectives of the fish. We went in and saying, what are the things that affect water temperatures? We identified three components of it. Shade. If you shade the streams, it affects temperatures positively, meaning it decreases the temperature. We put that component into our TMDL calculations because our charge now is, with the assumption, plumbing is what it is today, how do we now improve the conditions in Shasta River below the dam so they can support the habitat of the salmonids? So we knew that shade was not what it was there historically, and if by bringing it that back, are we improving the temperature? Our findings are, yes, we do indeed, like we did in Scott. Then we looked at it. Is that reduction in temperature from increasing the shade sufficient to meet the water quality standard in our basin plan? We found it was not. We went to the next component that we identified that is going to be affecting temperature. That was agricultural return flows. Water is taken in that watershed from the river. It's many times go through a number of different fields and returns back. During this time, the temperatures are raised and the nutrients are added to this. This water. That's discharge of waste. Clearly this board has jurisdiction over that, and clearly we wanted to bring that as a component, something that could be corrected. We added that component and the improvement from that component to the one from the shade. We still fell short. Then we looked at what happens if some of the cold water that was historically available and still is available from some of the sources that exist today, perhaps by modifying some of the plumbing that's in place, and Mr. Leland explained that, could we get additional reduction in the river below the dam? And the answer is yes. Not just simply increasing the flows, but adding in water that is cooler than the water that is going through that river today. When we add it, we use the minimum component that was necessary. We use an example of the water temperatures that were available from water coming from the Big Springs complex. And we just did an exercise on that. What if some of this cold water that is available today but is not making to the main stem, what if some of that were to be put back into the river? That completed the equation, barely. Like you heard testimony yesterday, some part of the river still is not meeting the the chronic requirements. But overall, we believe the first phase of TMDL is improving the situation tremendously. From 3 miles that are meeting the water quality standard today to almost 25 or 26 miles. Phase one TMDLs, I think that's a tremendous improvement. What are we asking for? More shade as it naturally grows there. Protect it and restore it. Curtail the return of tailwaters, which is bringing in hot water and nutrient-rich water. That is our chart. We must work on that. Third one, look at the opportunities that may be available not only below the dam, but also from above the dam, because that has been ignored. What are the opportunities that are available today in that watershed with the community working together to see if some of the cold water that has been cut off from this main system, if that could be put back in? We are saying, let's explore it cooperatively with the people that know that area, work with the agencies that have a say in it, and come back to you and say, we found it. Not only did we find it, but I think we can put it back into the system. Or saying, none exists, or the feasibility of that, putting that back in, isn't there. That's all this TMDL is about. Trying to live with the plumbing that's there today, trying to have an objective that we are mandated to meet in our basin plan, and trying to find ways with the current plumbing and some of the current barriers to doing some of the things, if that is feasible, and proposing that to you. We believe it is feasible. We believe meeting those temperature requirements of the fish will go a long ways in restoring the historic populations that used to be there. And we are going with the thing. Let's look at it, let's work at it, and come back to you and say what we found. That is our TMDL.
Thank you, Dr. Ranjit.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Dr. Gill. I'm sorry. Do we have any questions for Mr. Anderson?
Well, I'm interested in just a factual question that in the board packet, page 6-11, it's 6.4.1.1, Big Springs Creek flow. And states the flow from Big Springs Creek in the 50% flow increase simulation averaged 112 CFS. And my query is, I'm taking that to mean that when the water is added, the total water then flowing in coming out of Big Springs Creek is 112 CFS. So it starts out at 67, we leave in 45, and we get to 112.
That's correct.
And I just go to that in terms of, 45 seems like a small amount, but if we're trying to add back 45 to a creek that's flowing at 67, it may be possible. I'm not familiar with the lay of the land.
To just remind you, or alternate flow regimes.
Yeah, I do want to remind the board that this is not a prescription. We went over this yesterday.
Well,
there's flexibility in this plan. That's sort of the beauty of the way the implementation plan's set up. These, the fish and game process and the RCD process is an ongoing effort. They're generating new data, and these debates can take place within the framework that we've set up for you in the implementation plan. And so there will certainly be more discussion, debate, and, you know, data to be coming. This is an iterative process. The plan's set up to be that way. The plan's set up to make adjustments if new data becomes available. And so I would like you to keep that in mind as well.
And that's focused my thinking is trying to figure out, I mean, I understand the model as best I can. I'm just trying to get it out there so that in the future when people are, I mean, 2.1 degrees Celsius is a pretty tight number. And to get to that point, it's going to take somebody with a good understanding of how we get to that to redo all this stuff in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road. And I'm just trying to draw it out so that people can find their way through the rat maze here.
And if I can make one more point, all three of those collaborative processes already had flow measures written into their programs. And so I don't think there's any question that this is an area that the community is looking at. They all have suggested flow recommendations and for more data gathering. And so the measure really encourages that and allows flexibility. The 45 is a goal, but it's made absolutely clear that that's not a prescription, it's not a supply issue, and it's not going to impact any water rights.
Okay, before we close the record off, there are two people who are probably need to be heard simply because of the information that has been given to us. One is Ms. Nadine Bailey, and so if you would like to make a statement, again, this is legislative, not adjudicatory, and the other is Mr. Jim Dupree, who, as soon as Ms. Bailey is done. Good morning.
I just would like to thank you for asking these questions, because I think one of the things that has happened is there were questions as this process went on that the county and the people involved in this just didn't feel like they were had solid answers. So what you're seeing here is some reflection of that. And I know that we're hearing from council that, just trust us, we're from the government and we're here to help you and this will be all right. But you've got to recognize that this is a county that has been embroiled in resource battles for the last 20 years, and they're on their last legs. So that's, I just like to thank you for allowing Mr. Dupree, because I am definitely not a scientist, so I have nothing to speak to that, but thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dupree. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I'm Jim Dupree. I'm the Natural Resource Policy Specialist for Siskiyou County. And I'm not an expert on this, but an attempt to try to explain in general why you might see a big water year without significant temperature changes. You have to remember that the springs that feed into the Shasta River or to any of the tributaries, they're fairly uniform flow, and it takes a while for water to come off of the mountain from the snowpack and get into that groundwater kind of system. So you have, whether the water year is droughty or wet, you have kind of an even flow there from the springs. That's not the case, though, with runoff, surface runoff, or shallow subsurface flow from tributaries and the river system when you do have a wet year. But in June, July, and August, that runoff on the surface takes a lot of the solar insulation that is at the height, at the maximum. June 22nd is the summer solstice. The sun is the highest in the sky, and the heating is the greatest. And so the only really cold water that you have is the water that's not exposed to that kind of solar heating. And therefore, you can see a summer where you have tremendous runoff from the high precipitation year, and yet that water it can be fairly warm just because it's not yet part of that groundwater system. I hope that helps answer that question. There's another aspect to this as well. When you have a big water year, you don't have to start irrigation anywhere near as soon. And I think in the 1998 water year, I was told that irrigation didn't start until June. So the fields are wet. You have to be able to go in and work those fields. You can't just irrigate them because you have the water right to irrigate them. You irrigate them so that you can manage them and grow the crops. And so I think that 1998 year shows that, and if I'm correct, that irrigation didn't start till June, that gives you an idea of what the natural system here is doing. And I'm not going to dispute staff's efforts and data, but I think the uncertainty here calls into question whether you need to specify that 45 CFS. That specification makes it very difficult to get the kind of a collaboration, because even though it may not be subject to, it may be put in there kind of as a recommendation, or you may want to try to interpret that as a recommendation, people are going to say, well, in 5 years, what are they going to say? It makes it more difficult. And if you're looking for the solution, specifying the 45 CFS is really not needed.
Thank you. And I stand corrected. It is Dupre.
Dupre, yes.
Sorry about that.
One of those kind of days again. Huh?
Just like yesterday. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Anderson.
Just a question on beneficial uses. We're tying it to spawning. And the term includes spawning, reproduction, or early development. And I'm curious about what stretch of time is covered by early development. If you were a fish.
There are a variety of beneficial uses that are called out. The one that I would consider to be the most critical here is cold water habitat. And that's the one that we use to look at all of the life stages of the anadromous fish, not just the spawning life stage.
Okay, then I am going to, with the pleasure of the board, close off the record at this point and bring it back to the board for a discussion. Does not mean that you cannot ask a question, but it means that at this point we are going to stop with what we have and see if we cannot come to some kind of a conclusion on the Shasta TMDL. And with that, I would open it to the board. Mr. Corbin.
Well, I have one clarification. I thought Dr. Ranjit Gill gave the analytical analysis of tracing it. I did not agree with him that the particulars of the federal law would be binding on us, because we're operating also under state basin law provisions, and I believe we have to comply with those provisions for the Port of Cologne Act as well as the federal act, and that there's specific reconciliation provisions between the acts. So I just want to clarify for the record, I like the technical part, I didn't like the legal part. and with that, we'll take it back to the board. And then,
Mr. Anderson?
Just a question on Big Springs Creek temperature data. And I'm on 6.2.3.1, R page 6-4. And I guess my question is just, the first sentence says, due to access limitations, no stream temperature data is available at the mouth of Big Springs Creek. If that information becomes available, and it's different than what follows here, who gets credit for the change? Do you adjust the model and incorporate the new data, the flowing out of the creek data, or do you say, we've gained, it's actually colder than the model said it was, so how do we work out this in the future?
Again, TMDLs by nature are flexible and iterative through adaptive management. If there's new available that comes to light, there's every opportunity to to rethink the analysis based on that new information.
Okay.
Let me give you a pretty sort of straightforward answer to that. Let's say that from Big Springs Complex, we actually find out that the water coming out of that at the mouth is colder than what was assumed in this model. Then obviously we would not need 45 CS, we would need less than that. And let's say that it's actually hotter than what we assumed in the model. Then to bring those temperatures down to make the equation whole for the TMDLs, more water would need to be put in. The bottom line is, what is the nature of the water in the cold water category that becomes available through this effort? What are those temperatures? That will determine what is actually necessary to bring those temperatures down. And that's why we are leaving this option. Let's look at what's available, see what is the quality as far as temperature goes for that, and then see what we can benefit from that. The reason why I believe that the 45 CS is important, because that was the scenario that was used in order to develop the TMDLs and make it whole. One of the requirements of the TMDL is that there should be a linkage between what you're asking to be done and between the TMDLs that you're trying to achieve, which will achieve the water quality standards. That is the scenario we used. Then that becomes a threshold against which you will gauge the progress that we are making in there. So that is why it's memorialized in there that in future you would look at what was this model, when we said we can achieve this water quality standards, what were the parameters that went into this equation? Full shade, no hot water return from the irrigation return flows, and 45 CFS at a particular temperature as used in this model. That makes it whole. So we have a parameter that says, how are you going to measure your progress for riparian shade? Well, how close it comes to the natural potential. We have a way of gauging that. When do we think we have complied with the requirement of the equation that says no return flows? When we measure any return flows that are coming in, if they are not hotter than the receiving water temperatures, we met that. When are we going to be meeting the requirement for adding cold water? It is when at that particular temperature that was assumed in the model, when we are reaching close to about 45 CFS. We get more water at cooler temperature, less of that amount will do it. We are able to get it that's a few degrees or a little bit hotter than that. Perhaps it will need to be a little bit more. And that has been very clearly added to your table 4. And that's the significance of the 45 CSS, but it's not set in stone. It's not the flow. It's the decrease in temperature.
I just wanted to reiterate, just tag on the end of that, and I don't think this can be said enough, but the plan does not require 45 CFS out of Big Springs. That was the model run. The plan requests that cold water gets found somewhere and put into the stream. So, you know, the model run out of Big Springs was a way to do the model, but the plan doesn't require that location for the cold water.
Exactly right.
I want to keep reiterating that because it may change how you feel about the 45 CFS. I don't think it's correct to say you're requiring X flow out of Big Springs. Necessarily, that's not what the plan requires.
Mr. Corbett?
Well, what I'd like to propose is that I make a motion, and the initial motion be to approve per staff, and then we start making amendments to that. And the first, we'd start with the staff errata sheet. I know I had some proposed motions. Other board members may, and then we can go through all the different issues, have individual votes on those, and then vote on a final amended motion. And so with that, I'll test whether the board likes that idea by making a motion initially to approve per staff.
Perhaps rather than, is there an objection to it? Okay, before we get to that, Ms. Harris.
I'm trying to look at this maybe from the landowner's perspective as we sit here and talk about increase and decrease. The farmers are thinking about increase and decrease and more than just water, and as are the fisher folks that were here yesterday too. So I'm trying to understand the dynamics of this enormous situation that we're in. But the 45 CSF, I know it's an or thing, and so I sit here wondering, why are we making a huge big deal out of this when it's an or thing? Except for that I've said on the other side of the or, and I've said on the other side of the may, and I've said on the other side of it could be, when those things a few years later under different staff people have become you will and it has to be. So I kind of understand how it may or could be or ors become totally different under different people's interpretation of the paperwork. So if it's not a demand, the 45 CSF from our cold water, spring there, I read paragraph 9, and then I read on top of page 15 the actions to address the water temperature, where it says that we can conduct proceedings to go after water, and I think of my father, who I'm sure would be gripping the sides of his seat if someone was to say that to him. So I just wonder why, if it's an or, and if we have so much movable working room under that for that 45 CSF, then why do we lay the groundwork for going after more water in terms of water rights? Or am I reading this wrong? Why are we kind of putting down on paper that we can, you know, California combines water rights and water quality functions of the state government into one agency for this very reason. Jurisdiction over the administration of water rights lies with the Division of Water Rights and the State Water Board. However, the Regional Water Board finds it entirely appropriate to address low flows in the basin plan for the Division of Water Rights and State Water Board's considerations. And then I see on the top of page 15 some language that makes me feel like, well, if we need more water, we'll figure out how to get it. And if it's amending folks' water rights, then we're gonna have the groundwork set up to do that. So I'm trying to think about where other people are sitting and how that might. I can feel the stress building. So if it's an or, why are we doing that?
Okay, I do think that paragraph 9 in the resolution mm-hmm. needed more clarification.
Yeah, and, it's a little.
I have some proposed changes that fills that out that resulted from a discussion with save our Scott and Shasta Council. Of course, they would prefer that the entire paragraph still be deleted, but in the event that you want to keep it, and I do think it serves a purpose to sort of outline the jurisdictional issues if it's complete. And so we added in some more to the picture there in Resolution 9, because I do believe it sort of leaves it hanging, like, well, what are we doing? And so I would suggest that, and I have this, and I can hand it out to the board. You could, in that paragraph, detail that lack of flow is not considered a pollutant, that the Shasta TMDL is addressing temperature or heat, which is a pollutant. The implementation plan contains a recommended flow measure to increase dedicated cold in-stream flow in order to reduce temperature, and then add the same language that we were proposing yesterday that has the disclaimer that we're proposing to add into this table 4 that says this recommended flow measure does not alter or reallocate water rights in the Shasta, nor bind the State Water Board, Division of Water Rights, in any water right proceeding, and I think that would make that paragraph much more complete and a better picture of what's actually happening in this plan. And one other thing, and I'll hand this out, and Mr. Corbett has some additional changes to that disclaimer that includes Klamath and other state and federal courts. But I just want to make one other comment. The May cannot turn into anything else without a vote from this board. Mm-hmm. And so it can't get changed through staff. And let me hand these out.
Thank you.
I would remind us that Mr. Corbett essentially gave us a motion, and I, as it were, went over the top of that and asked if there were any objections to his proposal that we accept and then start the process of making amendments. And so it is at the pleasure of the board, but do we wish to entertain that motion and then look for a second, or is there no objection to this? Then, in the absence of an objection, Mr. Corbett, if you would give us a motion to accept this subject to the following amendments.
I'll make a movement. We approve the Shasta T MDL per staff with the understanding that each and every board member will have the right to make amendments.
And I'll second that motion.
We have a motion and a second to accept it, subject to amendment by board members. Call for the question. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. So we have accepted it. Now we are in the process of amending it, and I will open that up. Mr. Corbett.
The first motion I would make would be to adopt the staff errata sheet, except for, I believe, the last provision, which was reads, this recommended flow measure does not alter or reallocate water rights, that we approve all the ones above that, and we defer that because I have a motion on that. It's the original staff errata sheet for all provisions except for the last one, which is dealing with limiting the 45 CFS as not being binding in a future state water rights decision, and I believe that provision's too narrow. So we'd approve everything but that provision. Yeah. Do we have additional copies, or can we? It's very short. We can read it in the record, maybe even. Or maybe let's get written copies so that we do a good job here.
And then Board Member Anderson can look at the
print pattern and perhaps find it.
Mr. Anderson, well, we are waiting for a written copy of that.
No, okay. I'll wait with you.
And while we're waiting, I'll explain what I didn't mean to confuse you guys. I just handed out two pages. One has four sentences. These are changes that I understand that Mr. Corbett will introduce at the appropriate time. And then the other one is deals with resolution number 9. And some suggested changes or an alternative.
It's on the queue. Can we have those queued up, Drew, so that when we get to those, we can have them?
No, I had it in my head.
You have one? You want to sit here? So you can look at it, or do you have it memorized?
So essentially, the motion would be to approve the errata sheet, page 9 and 12 changes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to change the first two items of the errata sheet, page 9, at the end of the third paragraph, replace CRMP with Valley RCD and its CRMP or through the CDFG COHO ITP. And the second change would be in the first paragraph, add at the end or through the CDFG COHO ITP. Call for the question. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so we have dealt with that. The only remaining one then is the page 13.
Gene, need you.
Mr. Anderson was the second.
Okay. Then I'd like to move that instead of the existing language on that was recommended that refers to that flow measures do not alterate or reallocate water rights in the Shasta watershed nor bind the State Water Board, I want to broaden that to include, and it's, well, to read, it's just easier to do, but I think if we don't want a binding there, we don't want a binding elsewhere. So the recommended language is, this recommended flow measure does not alter or reallocate water rights in the Shasta or Klamath River watersheds, nor bind the regional board in future TMDLs, the State Water Board, Division of Water Rights in any water rights decision, or state or and federal courts. And so I would move that language.
To be added to where?
I'll second it with, I think, the fourth line, water rights. There should be an S. We use, I don't know. It's the first time you use water rights, there's an S, and the second time you use it, there's no S. I don't know. If that's not appropriate, I'll take it as is.
Usually there's plural water rights.
Yes.
Bad badass.
Are we happy with water rights in both cases?
Yes.
And you have bad decisions, too.
Mm-hmm. No. It's just a funny term.
Mr. Corbett, could I ask you to reread that and include either the plural or singular?
It appears in Samantha's version.
But I believe that's Mr. Corbett's, correct?
They were all supposed to be the same, but is that in, in her original language?
I'm sorry.
There's a reference to page 13. Water rights.
I'm looking at John's.
It's not the errata.
It's John's.
On what's on the screen, it's in the fourth line, the first word.
Okay, that'll work too. Page 15.
And we just add an S before rights, so it reads rights decision or state and federal courts. Anyone have a problem with that? Okay, accept. It is a friendly amendment.
Okay, so we have Mr. Corbett's amendment with Mr. Anderson's friendly correction of the plural. Any question? Then we will call for the question. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, so we have that.
Now, the next item I'd like to bring up is, do we want to keep resolution number 9, assuming it has the amendment we just made at the very bottom, or do we want the alternative language? And I'm going to not make a motion unless someone wants to change.
If I may ask, our attorney, you've given us is an option, as I see it.
I actually recommend adopting the more complete version, but there is an alternative.
So, this or this? What you're saying to me?
She's out of John's wording there.
Yeah.
And just so the board knows, the resolution doesn't have a binding effect, but it is useful in explaining the rationale for the decision that you're making. And I do think it's useful to explain this intersection of water quality and water rights in your resolution. It's not imperative, but it does serve a purpose.
do we have a we are in a fork. We either go one way or the other, so someone needs to. Mr. Anderson.
I would send this down with the alternate, with the addition of the last sentence from the paragraph above it.
Can I
say that again?
Basically, we take John's language, which appears at the bottom of the long paragraph,
okay,
and add it to the short paragraph at the bottom.
Okay, now let me read it.
And I say that because the bottom paragraph lays it out that it's one of three measures necessary, and I think that's been the discussion we've had.
I like that better.
And you know, I have trouble with the first sentence of the long paragraph.
Me too.
Based upon the information provided to us yesterday, I'm not able to judge whether Clean Water Act does indeed consider lack of water a form of pollution.
Could I ask, so what you are suggesting, and I believe the audience can see this, wait, don't go anywhere. what you are suggesting is that we take the larger paragraph at the top and the smaller paragraph at the bottom.
No.
Okay.
Take where it says, this recommended flow measure does not alter from there, and then just add it to the bottom one that starts in 1967.
That would be correct.
And we do away with all of the and all the stuff at the top goes away.
Yeah.
Okay, if
so where the cursor appears fifth line up from the long paragraph bottom, insert that now at the bottom of the page. So it would be
so that and
so
one of us should read it, and perhaps you could do that for us, Mr. Anderson.
In 1967, the state legislature combined the Water Rights Board and Water Quality Board to create the State Water Board to address the relationship between water quality and quantity. Increasing cold water supply is one of the three measures necessary to meet the temperature water quality standards. This recommended flow measure does not alter or reallocate water rights in the Shasta or Klamath River watersheds, nor bind the Regional Water Board and future TMDLs, State Water Board, Division of Water Rights, in any water rights decision, or state and federal courts.
Okay. I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion to combine the last statement of the last sentence of the larger paragraph with the and tack that onto the end of the alternative beginning in 1967. Any questions? Then we will call for the question. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Okay, now I'm not trying to get people confused, but back to the sheet where I had four recommendations, one of which has already been adopted, so just cross off the top one.
I'm sorry, Mr. Corbett, if I could interrupt. The top one is also proposed by staff to be added to Table 4, and you haven't moved on that yet.
Would I'm a little confused because if I go back to the errata sheet, that was page 13. Is that what you're referring to?
Right. With your amendments to this blurb, it still needs to be moved into Table 4.
Okay. I thought we did that on the prior vote, but I will specifically move the recommended flow measure does not alter or reallocate water rights in the Shasta or Klamath River watershed, comma, nor bind the Regional Water Board in future TMDLs, the State Water Board, comma, Division of Water Rights in any water right decision, comma, or state and federal courts. I move to Table 4 as well.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Ms. Harris seconds that. Discussion? Call for the question. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, now we have that in the Table 4. Back to the other sheet, Mr. Corbett.
I wanted to move, and what I might do is I'll move all three, and then if any board member wants discussion, just raise your hand and we'll pull out the item. That we move the goal of water conservation is to increase stream flows to protect in-stream beneficial use. I don't see why we would be mandating it if it isn't there. I think it's implicit, but I think it's good to state an overall principle. I do also want to say that we do not have the power to implement that. So that's why it's a goal. Two is the annual review will occur in a public forum designed to include all stakeholders, including downriver communities, tribes, sports, and commercial fishermen. And this just ties the basin together. And it's very consistent with prior decisions of the board. And the last one is if the executive officer receives credible evidence that the Shasta River flows are diminishing, the executive officer shall promptly report this to the regional and state water board.
My question to you, Mr. Corbett, is the last provision, where would you have that be put? So I've indicated the page numbers on the prior two. Those would go in a staff report, but it's not clear where you're proposing to put this language.
Could maybe what I'll do is withdraw the last one. I may even have to take a recess to find the page number because it's gotten lost in my notes. And so I'll just move pages 8 to 16 after the third sentences, page 10-1. I'll defer the last one until I can find out where the prior page number assigned to it went.
Mr. Anderson.
A question on your page 8-16. Again, that's section 8.4.4.
Okay.
And the statement occurs in that paragraph, water made available through the implementation of conservation measures must be dedicated to beneficial use in order to be effective under this plan. And I guess I'm just curious what the new sentence says that's new.
Well, it says it's our goal whether we can do it the way that's... I don't think we specified a manner of compliance in the plan, which is wise because I'm not... One, it's beyond our authority. Two, it's third-party groups. This just made it clear our goal is no matter how you shuffle the deck, if you're doing it, this is what our goal is out of it. And you can call it a little redundant. It's not the end of the world either way, but to me it was better to put in some basic principles of where we're coming from.
Okay, we have a motion dealing with the errata on page 8, 16, and 10-1. Is there a second for that?
I'll second.
We have a second from Mr. Anderson. Discussion? Call for the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. With respect to the third item that you have there over the prompt reporting of declines, we have adopted this TMDL, and so if you wish to get this in, we really need to know a reference to where, or it doesn't get in and there's not much we can do about it. I
understand that, Mr. Chairman.
Could I offer a suggestion?
I would definitely am seeking suggestions. Basically, this started off some time ago, and I have to fumble around through my notes to try and find the original citation. So if staff would be so charitable as to provide a suggestion, it would help me considerably.
We actually
otherwise, I'll painfully go through all this, and you can all watch me.
We actually never figured out the right page number, but if I could suggest, since it's reads like implementing language for the regional board, that we include it in Table 4 somewhere in the flow section. Seems to make sense.
Okay.
Probably there's a section, regional water board will, and then there's a series of bullets there. And
be page 14.
Right, 14 of the action plan.
Well, I had the regional board. Will is, oh, I see. Okay. Why don't we add it as an additional bullet under Regional Water Board on page 14? And the purpose of this provision is if some reason things are going south, we don't want to have it where the plan is not addressing it. Credible evidence, as you know, will mean the board will evaluate the credibility of the evidence at such time if it should occur. And this is sort of a downside emergency situation, which I don't anticipate happening.
Mr. Anderson.
Just have you expound a bit on the in the second line, that river flows are diminishing. They go up and down with the season. Do you mean... How do you mean diminishing?
Well, I originally had it seasonally corrected, and then I had a whole bunch of criteria in there. I don't think it's credible if you don't take into account annual rainfall. Just it would, to me as a board member, I would say, well, go back to the drawing board. And rather than try and put all those criteria in there and qualifications, I thought it's just easier to say diminishing and credible evidence. But a mere diminishment in flow over 3 years, if you had lower precipitation, is not credible evidence.
Okay, we have then a motion from Mr. Corbett to include the requirement for the executive officer to notify the board if there's credible evidence of a diminution of the flow. Do we have a second?
Second.
Mr. Anderson seconds that. Discussion? Call for the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Now, Mr. Chairman, we have one last issue, and that is I think we ought to discuss whether the 45 CFS is included or not in the final plan. I am not prepared to make a motion on it in the sense that I believe it's been properly qualified. But we need to discuss that because it's certainly been a matter of interest.
And we will absolutely throw it open to the board. And perhaps we will start. Mr. Anderson, do you have any comment?
Well, I'm persuaded by the OR that it's okay as it reads.
Mr. Corbett, anything to add?
No.
Ms. Harris.
Ms. Olson assures us that that OR is our saving grace there. So.
And you have a disclaimer and a should.
Yeah. We have a disclaimer and a should and a may and a could be. And that's all.
Mr. Cochran.
I'm all right with it.
Then... shy of a motion, my assumption is that there is general satisfaction with it, given all of the caveats surrounding it. Mr. Corbett.
Do we need an overall motion incorporating the amendments? I think we do. So I will move, per staff, except as specifically amended by the board, be adopted as the TMDL for the Shasta River.
We have a motion. Mr. Cochran seconds on that discussion. Then we will call for the question. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? We have a TMDL. We'll take about a 10-minute break. We will come back.